As Russia's war in Ukraine passes the 8th month mark, some feel the war could last much longer, even years.
Both sides rapidly using up weapons supplies. Victory may come down to who can last longer.
How much of a toll has Moscow's aggression taken on the country?
More than 6,000 civilians, Ukrainians dead, and more than 9,000 wounded as a result of this war. These numbers could vary, of course, and could be more. Around 10 million people, 10 million Ukrainians left the country. More than 7 million are back.
And later in the program, what's life like in the Kharkiv region, recently liberated from Russian occupation? Today is Monday, October 24th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. Russian forces began their full-scale invasion of Ukraine 8 months ago today. Britain's Ministry of Defense said Russia continues to use Iranian unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs, against targets throughout Ukrainian territory. In a Twitter post, the ministry said that Moscow is likely using Iranian Shahed 136 UAVs to infiltrate Ukrainian air defenses and as a substitute for Russian-manufactured long-range precision weapons that are becoming increasingly scarce. In addition, the ministry says Ukrainian efforts to contain the UAVs have been successful. And it's that scarcity of weapons on either side that may play an important factor in how long the war lasts. From the Associated Press, Ben Thomas starts us off.
The U.S. and other NATO members have sent billions of dollars worth of weapons and equipment to Ukraine to help in its fight against Russia's invasion. But that's now presenting a dilemma for European countries facing weapons shortages as they weigh the risk that Russia could target them next.
Our enemy have many weapons and artillery. We don't have a lot of artillery.
After 8 months of intense fighting, the Allies expect the war will continue, maybe years, with both sides rapidly using up weapons supplies. Victory may come down to who can last longer. This Ukrainian commander asked to be identified just as Yuri.
Most of the times we have problems with tanks and artillery.
We're standing up for Ukraine's right to defend itself.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has urged NATO members to dig deep and provide Ukraine more, thanking his Estonian counterpart at the Pentagon this week.
We can all see the differences that these efforts are making on the ground and the progress that the Ukrainians have made in their counteroffensive.
Estonian Defense Minister Hannu Pevkur.
We will stand united with all of our allies today to make sure that in the future we will not look back and think that we could have done more.
But Pevkur notes the strain on countries' own defense stockpiles comes up all the time, especially among smaller NATO countries. Estonia shares a 183-mile border with Russia, and he says the question is, how much risk are you ready to take? Still, with U.S. support, he says,
Estonia will acquire HIMARS systems that will substantially reinforce the Estonian defense forces.
Stunned residents looked on as firefighters doused smoking wreckage in the Siberian city of Irkutsk. The region's governor says an Su-30 fighter jet slammed into a two-story building that housed two families. Both crew members were killed, but there were no casualties on the ground. An investigation into the cause is underway. It's the second time in a week that a combat jet has crashed in a residential area in Russia. A bomber went down October 17th near an apartment building in a city on the Sea of Azov, killing 15 people and injuring another 19. I'm Ben Thomas.
Russia fired missiles and drones into Ukraine south on Sunday. Reuters' Tamara Lindstrom continues our coverage.
Under pressure in the south of Ukraine, Russia fired missiles and drones into Ukrainian-held Mykolaiv on Sunday, destroying an apartment block in the shipbuilding city near the front, and said the war was trending toward uncontrolled escalation. A Russian missile strike on Sunday wiped out the top floor of an apartment block in the city, sending shrapnel and debris flying, smashing windows and cracking walls, and leaving cars crushed under the rubble. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu said, without evidence, that Ukraine could escalate by using a dirty bomb, conventional explosives laced with radioactive material. Ukraine does not have nuclear weapons while Russia has threatened to use its nuclear arsenal. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Sunday that only Russia was capable of using nuclear weapons in the area and that Russia's accusations are a signal of their own plans. In a flurry of calls, Shoigu discussed what he called a rapidly deteriorating situation with French, British, and Turkish counterparts, his ministry said, and also spoke with U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin for the second time in 3 days. The White House National Security Council said in a statement it rejected Shoigu's false allegations that Ukraine is preparing to use a dirty bomb on its own territory, and that the world would see through any attempt to use this allegation as a pretext for escalation. Ukraine's advances in recent weeks around Kherson have been met with intensifying Russian missile and drone attacks on civilian infrastructure, which have destroyed about 40% of Ukraine's power system ahead of winter. Russian occupation authorities are evacuating civilians deeper into Russian-held territory before an expected battle for Kherson, a gateway to Crimea, which Russia annexed in 2014.
Tamara Lindstrom of Reuters News. The war has changed the lives of millions of Ukrainians, especially for women who have lost their loved ones. VOA recently spoke to two women whose husbands died in Ukraine's eastern front lines as the men were defending the country from Russian assault. Today, the women both carry on their husband's legacy and adapt to a new life. Anna Chernikova brings us their story.
The life of 25-year-old Karina Sinelnikova changed irreversibly on June 9, when she received a call from a commander at her husband's military base, saying he gave his life in a battle in Severodonetsk in the Luhansk region. Her husband, Alexander Sinelnikov, was a doctor with military experience from the war in Donbas. When the full-scale invasion began, his only wish was to go back to the front line and help defend the country. He used all his military contacts to enlist as an army doctor on June 2nd, a week before he was killed.
There was artillery shelling. My husband was helping the wounded soldier at that moment, and another soldier was assisting. And then it was hit again, and that was it.
Katerina Karvatko is a soldier. Her husband, Bohdan Karvatko, served in the military for 8 years. He was killed in the battle for Lysychansk on June 20.
It's difficult for the children. We tried to explain to them as gently as possible what had happened. At first they were okay, but then asked, "Is our dad no longer here?" They started to ask questions. "Did our dad die?" We said yes, that we are now alone, that there are only 3 of us left, that we have to be strong.
Now, Karvatko continues to fulfill her duties as a soldier and a mother. She is determined to carry on her husband's work. Karina Sinelnikova is living with the pain of her loss every day. She realizes this is her new life and is focused on taking care of her daughter, Sofia, who has developmental issues and needs urgent therapy. One day, she wants to tell her about the heroic sacrifice her father made.
The main goal now is to cure my daughter. The future is to wake up tomorrow.
Both women and their children are currently receiving support from the charity fund Children of Heroes, which works to address the complex needs of children who lose one or both parents.
The first is emergency assistance with evacuation, relocation, financial assistance, also help with basic humanitarian needs. And what is important and basic here is psychological help. Also, we have a direction of medical assistance.
The war has shattered the lives of many women in Ukraine, but it appears not their will to carry on. Anna Chernikova for VOA News, Kyiv.
And Anna now joins us from Kyiv. Anna, thank you again for joining us and for that very moving report. As we move forward, this war has lasted 8 months. Can you give us a sense of what the impact has been on Ukraine since Russia launched this full-scale invasion back on February 24th?
Yeah, Steve, actually, today is 8 months of this full-scale invasion. And of course, I think that the main impact we should start with is definitely people. For the moment, we have confirmed information of about more than 6,000 civilians, Ukrainians dead, and more than 9,000 wounded as a result of this war. These numbers could vary, of course, and could be more, but this is confirmed information that we have. Unfortunately, every day, Ukrainians continue to die. In terms of the people who had to leave their home, we know that from the beginning of the invasion in February, around 10 million people, 10 million Ukrainians left the country. For the moment, we know that more than 7 million are back, and more than 2 million of Ukrainians remain abroad and try to live in a more safe environment abroad.
Anna, that's the human toll. What about economically?
So for the moment, we know that the losses are exceeding $127 billion. This includes the housing stock damages and, of course, infrastructure damages and energy damages. We can say that house stock damages, for the moment, at least this is what we get from the officials, has the biggest amount, which is around 40% of all losses. This is around $50 billion. If we compare this number to the beginning of June, this amount has increased in this last month is on $11.2 billion. So this is something that, of course, government is also considering when analyzing this war and analyzing the support Ukraine needs and long-term support Ukraine would require.
Anna, thank you very much for the recap of what's taking place in Ukraine over these past 8 months. Turning our attention to the counteroffensive, the city and region of Kherson continue to be a hot spot in the country. What's the latest? Because we have seen those reports and those video images coming out of Kherson of these evacuations. So what do we know in terms of what happened at least over the weekend?
Yeah, we're hearing that Russian forces continue to move around and continue to evacuate some of their staff. However, according to the head of Ukrainian intelligence, Mr. Budanov, he says that this is kind of an image that Russian Federation is trying to create, informational kind of image. But in real life, they are getting ready for fights inside of Kherson, and they're getting ready to defend Kherson. What he also mentioned that this is true, that Russian forces actually evacuate some of the financial institutions, also some of their personnel, military personnel, especially those who are wounded. So all people who are not mobile enough to actually run away from Kherson fast in case it's needed. However, he highlighted that we should not think that actually Russian forces are giving up Kherson that easy. So he's saying that they're getting ready for the defense and for the fight. And he said that, of course, Ukrainian forces are moving in the direction which was announced previously by the general staff. And he also said that in case Ukrainian forces would be able to get Kakhovka Dam under control, this would mean for Russian forces that actually they are in the situation similarly to what Ukrainian forces have been to in Mariupol. And this is also why Russian forces are trying to move everything possible to the other side of the river in Kherson region, just to make sure that in case they have to run, they can run quickly.
Thank you very much for that, Anna. Turning to Ukraine and business operations, there's a report that came out earlier today. The Ukraine's National Anti-Corruption Agency declared that former central bank governor Kirilo Shevchenko is a wanted man as of Monday, along with two employees, on suspicion of embezzling some $5.4 million. But I also understand that's not the only kind of scandal rippling through Ukraine today.
Yes, you're absolutely right. There is also another big scandal in Ukraine that basically started over the weekend, at least additional details has been revealed. This is regarding the Motor Siege enterprise. So Motor Siege is one of the biggest in Ukraine, one of the biggest companies that produce elements and engines for helicopters in Ukraine. And it was found by the Security Service of Ukraine that Motor Siege engines were actually used by Russian Federation in their helicopters. And this was found out according to those helicopters that Ukrainian air defense managed to destroy in the air and managed to actually analyze. So what we know for the moment that Security Service of Ukraine detained the president of the industrial company Motor Siege and on the suspicion of working with the Russian Federation and for the Russian Federation. Motor Siege is saying that they cannot believe this is true, and they presented a certain official letter in support of the president of Motor Siege, of their main boss. So they are saying that they are disappointed with this decision, and they do not believe that that Mr. Bohuslav, which is the president of Motor Siege, could be involved in this kind of fraud.
Anna, thank you very much for that comprehensive reporting. Reporting for us from Kyiv, Ukraine, Anna Chernikova. Anna, thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. As a result of Russia's invasion, residents of the once occupied city of Kupiansk in the Kharkiv region have little or no access to gas, electricity, or water. Anna Kostichenko visited the city and shares the challenges of surviving in the formerly occupied location.
From here, the city of Kupiansk in the Kharkiv region is only about 30 kilometers to the current front lines. The armed forces of Ukraine liberated Kupiansk in the Kharkiv region from Russian forces on September 24th, but the city continues to be shelled. Local resident Olena Borchan is trying to save at least some of the goods from her store.
A rocket hit it some 3 days ago. Now everything is covered in broken glass.
Another rocket blew out all the windows in the apartment of a former local prosecutor, Yuri Chupilko.
I'm not leaving because I'm not the type to run away. I'm glad my apartment is still standing. Just the windows got blown out.
Chupilko says these are relatively minor losses. Many locals had their homes completely destroyed. There is no gas in the deoccupied city, so locals cook mostly on open fires outside. There is also no electricity or telephone service in the city. Before Russia's February 24th invasion of Ukraine, Kupiansk was a bustling and busy city, says Chupilko. He adds he will never forgive Russia.
Our northern neighbor is a police state with no rights and freedoms. Do you understand? When Ukrainian armed forces enter the area, Russians retreated immediately. They used to call themselves our older brother, but they turned out to be no relative of ours.
Anna Trofimenko spent the entire occupation in Kupiansk. Russian soldiers took away her son's car and threatened Anna with a gun when she tried to argue.
A Russian soldier jumped out and pointed a gun at me. I said, "I'm as old as your mother and I am not armed. Why are you pointing a gun at me?" He said, "Because I was making a fuss."
But there are some signs of renewal. A few days after Russian forces left, a market started operating in the city. Irina and others like her survived the summer in part because of the crops they grew themselves.
We have grown some potatoes and onions.
Before the war, some 30,000 people lived in Kupiansk. The city was an important railway junction. Milk and meat factories, as well as a large sugar plant, operated here. Today, locals are gathering firewood from the debris of their own houses as they try and prepare for what surely will be a tough winter. Anna Kostyuchenko for VOA News in Kharkiv region, Ukraine.
VOA Russian service reporter Natalka Piznia spoke with Representative Brian Fitzpatrick, a Republican congressman from Pennsylvania, recently via Zoom. Piznia began the conversation by asking Fitzpatrick why he thought Ukraine was important to American national security.
Well, number one, the Ukrainians are amazing people. They are a peaceful, loving nation. They were invaded by a brutal dictator. They did nothing wrong. They were 30 years into their independence when they were invaded. They were thriving economically, and they were doing great post-Soviet Union breakup and post their independence. And they came under assault by a brutal, evil, genocidal dictator. And it is the job of every freedom-loving nation to unequivocally and unapologetically have the back of other freedom-loving nations like Ukraine. That's number one. So we do it for the Ukrainians and the Ukrainian people and the women and children who are under assault right now. That's number one. Number two, it's important for the stability of world order. If the message that is sent is that it's okay for a brutal dictator, a bully, to take advantage of a smaller freedom-loving nation who is their neighbor, then it's gonna unleash chaos across the world. So it's both reasons. It's for the human dignity of the Ukrainian citizens, and it's also for the stability of world order.
Actually, related to some statements that we can often hear from people who are running for Congress from the Republican Party, specifically, we could say maybe J.D. Vance, who has a lot of support of party leadership right now. He was publicly saying that Ukraine is its own state and Ukrainians have to deal with whatever they have to deal. And Americans have their own responsibilities and too many domestic problems. So it's actually not an American concern. And why I'm flagging him, because this message of some sort of isolationism, it's not something rare we hear at the moment. So do you think there will be a change in the policy after the midterm election?
Well, we'll see. I mean, you know, I'm not going to criticize any colleagues or future colleagues. And, you know, I hope J.D. Vance wins. And I think he'll make a great senator, for one. You know, as far as what our policy is going forward, that's the job of myself and Marcy Kaptur, the co-chairs of the Ukraine caucus, to, you know, make the case. That's what our country is, a democracy. The people are in charge ultimately. And it's the job of elected officials to make sure that we advocate for the causes we believe in, but ultimately we have to be a voice for the people, and the people are in charge. And it's our job to explain to the people why this is important. I just told you why I personally think it's important. That's what I tell my constituents every day in every single venue I go to. It doesn't matter who I'm speaking to. I find a way to bring up Ukraine and Russia's genocide in Ukraine. And my people respond, and our district supports Ukraine because I send that message. So, you know, my job, you know, when we have a new Congress, is going to be to talk to my new colleagues and explain my position to them and why I think it's really important. You know, I mean, a lot of, you know, I've had a lot of, you know, views that have changed and evolved over the years with the more information I've got. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, and I hope that that's going to be the case with a lot of my colleagues that are currently or maybe in the future serving with us.
And that was Representative Brian Fitzpatrick speaking to my VOA Russian colleague, Natalka Piznia. Russia has repeatedly denied targeting civilians and committing atrocities. And on that note, that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to stay with all the latest developments by visiting voanews.com. And on behalf of the entire team at Flashpoint Ukraine, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.